Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. You know, in a good number of our previous episodes, and you hadn't mentioned it lately, the last episode and our warm-up to get ready for these episodes, you didn't mention that anything has failed at your house recently. Is your TV
you
failed
should ask
yet?
That. No, but my wife just went through her third blender. She just finished destroying our third blender in, I would say, less than a year. I want to watch her do what she does, because she's one of the best stress testers for your typical oyster blender or the regular, you know, milkshake smoothie blenders. She is amazing at breaking all the brands that we've had.
Well, she's not filming episodes for Will It Blend, is she?
No, she hasn't stuck a cell phone in there or, you know, rocks that I know of.
Yeah, a bag of marbles.
But it seems to be either the motors are not powerful enough, because it ends up the motor quits turning. Hmm. Now, I've got three of them stacked up to disassemble. I'm kind of like, I'm not sure if I wanted to counter this. But yes, it is. I don't know how to explain it. Because I've never watched her. I know that she does the chocolate morsels. That's kind of like rocks. Yeah. And but a blender should be able to handle ice, and that's a pretty hard object.
It is, yeah. It's especially where you live in the cold Midwest areas. So let's do a quick break, and then we'll dive into it.
Hi, it's James Kovacevic here from HP Reliability. I encourage you, if you haven't had the opportunity yet, to download our free ebook on A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. You can find that at ascendoreliability.com/go/PM. If you have any questions, need help with your current PM program, please don't hesitate to reach out at info@hpreliability.com. Thanks.
All right. So on these three blenders, did you call the company or customer service or something like that? And something like that, you probably bought at a local store and you just, if it's young enough, you can take it back to them directly. But you probably have had these for a little while.
Probably, 3 months. And, you know, they get intermittent use. So by the time it happens, she hasn't used it much, but it has. It's not far enough out. And again, you know, the cost of the product is a big factor in it. I can handle a $20, you know, blender destruction.
Well, there's the problem, Kirk. You need to go buy a $200 blender actually blends
one
stuff.
One of them was $100. I don't want to mention brands, right, but it was $100, well-recognized brand.
And
so I said,
that motor out too?
Yeah, that was one of the first. So I said, well, if you're going to burn them up, I might as well buy the cheaper ones.
Buy the cheap ones. Buy a case of them.
And from my experience, there hasn't been a large difference between the cheaper ones and the very expensive ones.
They all
being
fail.
Yeah. Destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about your TV? Did you ever call them about your pixels getting dropped? What's your experience with customer service?
Oh, customer service.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten good reliability advice from your customer service calls?
I generally don't call customer service. As a engineer, I like to either get into it myself, or I'm recognizing the problem. I mean, the most recent customer service call was to the Apple store. Hmm. As Apple had reported, unfortunately for them, that they had intentionally, or there was a report, and I don't know.
Yeah, that was right around their Christmas time, wasn't it, that came out? That, yeah, yeah.
that, and it caused a lot of lawsuits that customers believed Apple communicated that they intentionally slowed down their older phones in order for Apple to sell a new phone. And it had to do with the battery life and mm-hmm. battery capabilities, I think, and that some of the phones would shut down, iPhone 6 and greater. Mm-hmm. Well, I just upgraded my iPhone to a 6 Plus. I like the large, mm-hmm. large memory. And so I had this iPhone 6 with about 2-year-old battery. Well, and since Apple then made an offering to the public that they would replace the battery at a $50 discount from their regular price of $79 to $29. Hmm. So I said, well, this makes my – because, as we've talked about in the past, that the, basically the only component that has a significant wear out function before technological obsolescence is a lithium-ion battery.
Yeah, yeah. The capacitors are all going to last 15, 20 years, and
right.
the silicon's going to last 30 years. At least.
Yeah.
And there's not that many buttons and connectors on it.
Yeah, they can wear – mechanical that can wear out. So. Yeah. Anyway, so when you basically replace a battery in a smartphone, you're really getting a new phone of that vintage. You know, you're not getting.
Just have to go do that because I've had the six for quite a while now, and I
would certainly take them up on this offer. $30 for a new battery is a great deal,
yeah.
And so I did go to the store. Now I can't say I had a great customer service experience because. I had already put in the order through the website that I wanted a battery replacement. That was the whole reason I went in to make an appointment with the Genius Bar.
Right.
Well, the appointment came. It was January 1st. And I went in, and of course I had to wait. And they're real nice about sitting you down and then coming over and meeting with you. So what's the problem? And they basically first would evaluate it through the Bluetooth connection, the battery health with their own software sitting next to it or in their diagnostic tool on their iPads. And she said, well, you got 91% battery capacity. And I kind of got the feeling the first thing she wanted to do was convince me that I didn't need to have a battery replacement. And I think that's probably a good suggestion from a economic strategy standpoint, as it was, 91%.
So instead of 6 hour battery time, you got 5 hours and 20 minutes worth.
Right, right. So anyway, I said, no, I'm really just wanting to, I don't have a serious symptoms, but you made this offer. So she agreed. And
were they able to do it right on the spot?
That was the annoying part is I had already said that I was coming in to replace a battery. And she said, well, we have no batteries here for iPhone 6. You'll have to wait until we order it. And here we put in your – we'll notify you by email when we get a battery in. Well, that was January 1st. And yesterday I – hadn't gotten in the morning. I still hadn't had a notification. I thought a week and a half should be sufficient to get an iPhone 6 battery into the Apple store.
Well, everybody else has those sixes want a battery.
And right. Exactly. And I thought, well, they've got a few. So I called in and said, what's going on? And she said, well, we'll notify you when we get a battery in. We don't, we get a big batch of batteries, different phones. And so, amazingly enough, Fred, and I don't know how the magic works, but at 1 o'clock later that afternoon, I get notified that a battery's ready.
A battery's there with your name on it.
Boy, on the same day I made the call, it's amazing how those coincidences happen. But anyway, I did go in. They replaced it. It took them 3 hours. I asked them to verify. Show me the battery capacity and their software. Mm-hmm. And she did. She said, okay, it shows 104%.
Yeah, that won't last long. That'll drop off quick and then it'll flatten out for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good they build in a little margin. It has a 4%.
Well, what would you have done if it would have been 96% capacity?
I would say that's not a new battery. Or your software's wrong.
Yeah.
You obviously put it in a new battery.
Well, then it's, you know, do I spend another 3 hours, you know, in the mall probably, or, you know, in the Apple store shopping for.
No. That's when I go home and write my review on.
Yeah. There is a part of reliability that is setting expectations, right? So they said, hey, we're setting up an appointment to replace the battery. Right. They interpreted it as we're going to do diagnostics to determine whether you need a battery or not, which is different than saying, hey, just replace the part.
Exactly. And they knew I needed a battery. So if they had, you know, but the fact that I had to come back twice when you took a lot of information from me to say, we don't have that battery for this model. And it may have been, and this was really shortly after that, January 1st, the fact that they were open on New Year's Day was, I thought, unusual. But anyway, going in there, I was one of the first. So I think the first approach, and I know through the news reports that this was, I could see some of the maybe read between the lines of what Apple was trying to do, and that was first assure people that through a test that their battery was probably fine, and unless they were having symptoms of sudden shutdown, that they could stay with the battery they have.
Right.
It saved them a lot of money, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, and time, too. They need to fix the worst ones first. It's a bit of triage going on.
Right.
But, you know, in general, though, I remember, were you at Dell when they were really famous for their customer service?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
I mean, I was at HP. I was very envious because even our internal HP customer service, to be frank, was pretty worthless. It was, you know, the worst part is after I left HP, I had a laptop that I bought when I was, you know, while still an employee and got a nice discount and get this big new laptop to be my machine as a consultant. And I'll never buy that kind of machine again. It was, I think, 12 pounds, you know, 3 extra batteries so I could fly to Denver kind of thing. It was a luggable, not a portable.
Right, like the first compact portable computer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just because you put a handle on it doesn't make it portable. Yes. Right. And so one of the rows of pixels, it was a line all the way across the screen, about a third of the way down, turned green. It just stayed green all the time. And so I called customer service for HP and says, hey, I think my display is failing. And one of the display driver, you know, traces is bad and it gives me the symptom. And they wanted to do a bunch of diagnostics and they wanted to log into the machine. And they wanted to see what I'm seeing. And, you know, an hour later, they go, oh, yeah, you're right. And so here's your option. You can buy a new machine and just pay full price. Like, what?
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
We'll send you a box. And you can pack it up in that and send it to our service center, and it'll take 7 to 10 days, and they'll get it back to you. And I'm like, how about you send me a box with a computer in it? I'll swap out hard drives.
Exactly.
So I have a machine after an hour, and you can take as long as you want to fix it. And he goes, no, we don't do that. And I think Dell did. Dell would actually fly people out or drive people out to people's homes and swap stuff. And it was phenomenal.
Right.
Not anymore, but they used to be just phenomenal.
Right.
And, you know, the Genius Bar is kind of a half step to what Dell used to do. I mean, you can go into the Genius Bar and it's actually wonderful. And you know, if they had the part, you would have been done, right?
And especially, I think, with usage problems or app problems or anything else, they would be very good. It does require a part.
Yeah. And they don't have big storerooms. They're not stocked as a repair center necessarily. So anyway,
But there's not a lot of parts you would change in an iPhone. There's not.
Really, my daughter knows that they –
battery. That's
she knows that they can replace the screen. She's gone through a few of those.
Right.
But so, I had only just left HP a few months prior, and already my brand new laptop has got this monitor problem. I'm like, this is ridiculous. One. Two, spending an hour and a half on the phone to convince you that you need to keep it for 2 weeks so you can fix it.
Yeah.
Come on. And so I knew the director of quality for the laptop division.
Right.
So I called him and said, and he sighed and he goes, I know it's a problem. here's what I'll do. I'll send you one of my laptops. You swap out the hard drive. I'll get your machine fixed. Or then you can send it to the service center and have them fix it. But the trade is I want you to write it up as a report, what your experience was and why you can't be without a computer for 2 weeks, you know, kind of thing. So
this
I suggest.
This is why your call may be recorded.
That's right. Although that's probably had nothing to do with it, but it's an example. Yeah. I tried to give him a customer's point of view of the impact of this problem and why it was unacceptable to take my computer for 10 days.
Right.
And so we went, made and got it fixed. And I used to have Samsung phones when I first got smartphones. I used to use, I didn't have Bluetooth. I tried a Bluetooth at that point and it wasn't quite there yet. It was sound quality wasn't there and it dropped calls and stuff like that. So I used the little plug-in, right? Little headset plug-in.
All right.
And, you know, and I had the top of the line, brand new Samsung, and the little connector where my headset plugged into would fail after about 15 cycles. I started tracking it, right? After four phones, I could call them and
you
go
went
through
four phones.
Yeah. Just for the 38
for
cent connector.
Problem?
Yeah. Okay. It would break off the board. Right. And so I ended up talking to one of the engineers later and goes, yeah, we went to surface mount for that connector to save some space and stuff. And we didn't anchor the connector to the frame so that all of the force of you putting the connector in, the male part into the connector, went straight across the solder joints and it just broke them.
Yeah. And especially with certain plugs, those 3.5 millimeter, I think, plug, you have quite a leverage. You know, some of them stick quite far out and it's like a cantilevered stress.
Huge compared to But, you know, we got to get the form factor, we got to get the size.
Right.
And after this third call, I'm like, all right, here's the symptoms, here's the problem. Let me read your checklist to you. Skip that, skip that, skip that, skip that, skip that. All right. This is what you need to know. I had it down. And, you know, and the poor person on the phone was like, how do you know what my checklist is? Well, I've done it before.
And you wonder now if Samsung, in their testing, will put a variety of different 3.5 millimeter plugs in there and different lengths and pull on it from every direction, you know, sideways.
And find out how
down.
Strong it is. Do they have a strength margin to they test to? Yeah. That's what
now
you
that they've realized that that's a big, that was a big issue. And I'm sure if you went through to four phones, they got thousands of, if not hundreds of thousands of them.
There was a Dilbert cartoon a few months ago about that, making a nice, shiny, slippery phone that
it's
100% drops.
Beautiful, slippery, and brittle.
That's right.
I posted that. Fred,
you did. That's probably where I saw it.
Yeah, it's called the BSB principle. Beautiful, slippery, and brittle.
That's right. And 100% failures within the first day.
Yeah, but fortunately, the 100% of the customers blame themselves for the problem.
That's right.
And I pointed out that that was the fundamental issue and the fundamental question that all people in reliability engineers have to ask. Especially with consumer electronics, when did the customer believe it was their fault and when did they blame a company for making a flimsy or less than robust device that they should have been more realizing that those stresses? For instance, and I don't fault the companies that make the smartphones because all of them are virtually the same, is that none of them put a rubber or a polymer edge or anything that would absorb shocks is almost always metal and solid with a glass front. And as you just talked about with your daughter, and my daughter's done it too, and I've done it, is the glass breaks. It's very, and when you have it is a beautiful phone. I look at the iPhone out of my protective case, and it's a beautiful device. And to be fair, I really like my Apple iPhone. I've had Android phones, and I've switched back to Apple. So any negative information I gave in this podcast about Apple, I just say I like them. I like their.
There's
their,
a black SUV outside your house right now. They know.
Tim Cook was just called, but anyway.
Right. But it's. I mean, they all deal with this stuff.
But everybody puts a case on it. Almost everybody has. I rarely see an iPhone or a smartphone without mm-hmm. some case, because it just takes one drop and the pain. And you talked about you've talked about in the past the cost of unreliability for customers is much higher than just loss of the part or mm-hmm. loss. It's inconvenience. There's a lot of other.
Oh yeah.
Cost to the customer besides just going and exchanging.
See, that's where I think the retail stores, I'm thinking of some local stores that have this, you know, no questions asked return policy. You just have a receipt, or they can find you in the register of their computer saying, yep, you bought that. Here's your credit card. You want a replacement? It's on the shelf. Right.
Right.
And they just, but it's worth it to keep you in the store. You know, and to take away that problem of I made the wrong purchase or it didn't work or whatever, so that you buy at their store. It was their marketing thing. Whereas I think some customer service, like the one you mentioned at the Genius Bars, oh, your battery's good enough. You don't really need to replace this, is probably in, you know, thinking either under direction of let's triage these things. We don't have a lot of batteries just, hey, you know, do you really want me to take this away for 3 hours and, you know, you not have your phone? Because that's a concern. It may have been a genuine, hey, you know, it's fine for your phone this age. It's doing fine. Versus, you know, it could have been nefarious or it could have been just honest. Hey, you know, you don't really need one. But I think many customer service folks don't get the impact of a failure. And on the brand, on the repurchase probability, the word of mouth capability. You know, I think that's the ones that get it right. They start with, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Let's investigate that some more. I'm pretty sure I can help you with that. Or I'm sure I can help you with that. Let's fix this problem. Versus other ones going, what's your name? What's your phone number? What's your social security number? How much money do you have? Are you going to be on the phone all day? I was like, oh my God.
Let's just get to the problem. Okay.
That's right.
That's right. And so I think, as you've talked about in other podcasts, I see from the titles that, you know, there's a lot more cost to failure for the customer than just the replacement of the part or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they have to be aware, you know, my time to go to the Apple store twice, things like that. It was a bit, but, you know, again, from knowing that that makes the phone basically a new phone when you put in a new battery, the component that will wear out made it well worth the cost. And I'm generally happy with what they did. And, you know, they finally gave me the battery, and they made up for what was a mistake in announcing that they or somehow the story got out that they were slowing their older phones down. So they kind of made up some ground from that. So anyway, I just that's kind of just one of the many things we all have to deal with.
I'm gonna have to see. We got to make it a fair and balanced podcast here. Somewhere there's, I know I've seen him on the net in around even before it was, you know, true calls to customer service, you know, because you probably remember the one where the guy says, well, how do I scan this document and send it to you? He says, well, just hold it up to the screen and I'll see it.
I know.
There's all kinds of, you know, like, or the customer was saying, well, I'm holding it up to the screen. Can't you see it? You know, no.
No. Right.
There's just ridiculous type stuff and cool, fun stuff. I got to find one of those listings. We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, that'd be good.
That's right. Because, yes, there are quite a few people out there that do not know how to read a operator, you know, read the basic instruction, the manual or whatever, and mm-hmm. you get some really hilarious. But just to wrap it up with the customer service, the best thing you can do then is quickly respond by solving the immediate customer's issue, whether it's send out another part or send out another service call or whatever. And, you know, it may not be broken in technical, but the customer feels that he's getting heard and his problem addressed. And that makes up for a lot of it.
I know why I brought this topic up. I just saw a Seth Godin blog post that he went on kind of a rant on this very topic. He says, you know, and even called out Verizon specifically. Yeah, so it was very clever. I'll see if I can find that. We'll add, I'll send that to you to add to the note.
We'd love to.
Yeah. But, you know, well, let's ask our customers. I'm sure there's gazillion other stories out there about both good and bad customer service stuff. And, you know, one of the things we didn't get to talk about, and we should make a note to come around back to it someday, is, well, what's the reliability engineer's role with customer service? I think it's a two-way street that many of us miss, and mm-hmm. and that it's something that we probably should talk about. But let's ask our listeners, you know, what's your experience? What kind of wonderful stories or really horrible stories or amusing stories, or do you work with your customer service folks, and does that work out well? And what kind of information works well going back and forth, that kind of stuff? So let us know. Head over to reliability.fm and you'll find the Speaking of Reliability show and the other shows in the reliability.fm podcast network. And you can find suggestion boxes and comment fields, and you can find us on the About pages or on LinkedIn. Lots of ways to get in touch with us.
But we'd love all kinds of information there. Yep. Yeah.
And we'd love to have you join the conversation. So feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. So, yeah, Kirk, let's see what we get out of that. And I think we could do a whole podcast show just on dealing with customer service. That might be the next big iTunes show, you know.
And I would really be curious as to how many reliability engineers go dive into those customer service logs and really look at what the mm-hmm. Customer service engineer is trying to deal with, you yeah. know. Yeah. So it's very difficult.
Yeah, that might be another whole podcast. That might be exciting.
Sounds good.
Call in and do your rant kind of show. No, we wouldn't want to do that. All right. Well, thanks so much, Kirk. We'll catch up with you again, and good luck with your new battery and all that good stuff.
Okay. Oh, you bet.
If and when you ever get one, yeah.
No, I've got it. It's done.
It's done,
104% capacity.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Use it wisely.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Kirk.
Okay, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.